Off the Court, presented by Point Guard U. Today, we are joined by Coach Steve Lynch from Brownsburg. Coach, super pumped to have you on today.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to getting after it with you, getting into these questions. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself as a coach, your journey as a coach? What inspired you to work with high school basketball players?
Well, we're talking off air before we started. Again, your journey was pretty unique, and I went to small school in Northern Indiana, Manchester College, and was just going to be a high school teacher and coach. And as I concluded playing, our president hired Steve Alford to be our new head coach. And so I stayed and started working with him. And obviously with his background in IU basketball and Mr. Basketball and playing in the Olympics, and just a wonderful opportunity for me to get tied in with somebody on the highest of stages in college basketball and playing professionally. And that journey took us into some college coaching and opportunity to play in the Sweet 16 after taking Manchester to the Division III National Championship. So just a great way to start my coaching career with Coach Alford. And then segueing back to Indiana at Ball State with Tim Buckley and getting into high school coaching. So I ended up where I intended to be, but about 16 years after that.
That's awesome. So coaching at a college level to then transitioning to high school level, that's got to come with, some bit of a learning curve, I'd imagine. How differently do you have to handle college players compared to a high school player?
It was interesting. The Division III experience and those guys, some of those guys I was really close to age with. So now we're close friends, guys that, in the text groups and then now with social media and keeping up and those guys having children and just following each other closely. Those are some great friendships at the beginning of my coaching career. Missouri State, been Division I. Again, it's just not being there anymore. They still get together. There's still the text groups, but probably not seeing them as much. But the relationships were really good at every level. The college kids probably a little more mature and, that step beyond high school. I'm probably not as buddy-buddy. Plus, I'm older. 55 versus being 27 at the time. The relationships are just different. But at the same time, I would say the relationship at any level has been the key to our coaching success.
That's awesome. I love that. And now, one thing I notice a lot with high school coaches nowadays compared to maybe a more traditional old school approach to coaching is a lot of times, and I think I see this even in schools as a former teacher, coaches have to wear a lot of hats, whether you might be that kid's only, parental, father figure or disciplinarian or mentor, or the only person who's really checking in with them on grades or whatever it is. I've had a lot of, wear a lot of hats myself as a coach for kids that I didn't know I would have to wear. I think one of the biggest ones as coaches, the modern coach, I would say, is making sure that your kids are not only successful on the court, but also in the classroom, which I feel like, most of the time before it was just get your stuff done and be ready to go. But how do you encourage students to excel both academically and athletically, and kind of strike a balance?
Honestly, it's always a good challenge. Again, going back to the relationship that you're wanting to build the entire person. And obviously it's through athletics. Speaking personally, like mine was 4-H, the adults in my lifetime that helped me become the person I was not necessarily athletics always. But we're mentoring a young person in a lot of areas. So it's academically, it's maturity, it's growth. It's through athletics that we have the tie. And we're using athletics, unless a young man has a chance to be a professional athlete, we're using athletics as a tool to motivate them, nurture them into growing into the person they're going to become as an adult. So, again, we're hitting a lot of areas. You already said, sometimes it's counseling, sometimes it's academic, sometimes it's the parent athlete relationship. We've got a great situation here where we have student athlete leadership. So we call it SALT. And one of the things that I think, even as a parent, like those things that kids say, like, these are the things my parents do that make being an athlete hard, but I also think it's what drives them to be really good, is the high expectations from parents. But nurturing that relationship between a parent and an athlete would be the other area that I think you always have to address. And it's constant, right? I mean, it's hard being a parent. And I say this now that I'm at almost at the end of my parenting, with my kids getting ready to leave the house, it's hard being a sports parent. And there's just a lot of things that go into being a parent in general that's hard or difficult.
No, so true. And you touched on something that's very, that I love hearing coaches talk about, leadership, skills for kids. It's essential, obviously, for coaches, but I think it's super important for kids. And you talked about, we're shaping kids to not only, you know, unless they're going to go play pro, but just for life after that, you know, and leadership, such a crucial part. And that, I think that's such an important lesson that kids can learn in sports. But I think it's also somewhere where a lot of coaches can struggle to, create opportunities for kids to become leaders, especially, even possibly newer coaches, younger coaches, but even sometimes older coaches that might just not think, why do the kids need to lead? How do you empower team leaders on your team? And what role does that play in your team dynamics?
That's a great question. Again, that's an evolution. Again, I think older coaches probably learned through some mistakes. I certainly have made my fair share and continue to learn every day from our kids. We've that communication piece, and we talked a little bit earlier, just like, that the relationships, the communication, most certainly, like, I'm in charge of our program. I'm responsible for it. So we kind of start out with, it's the coach's fault, it's, I'm responsible for what happens. Therefore, if it goes bad, it's on me. And so we try and do it by example. And then our kids have been really good. Like, we're very, very fortunate that just have had a lot of kids that buy in. So when the buy-in, and then they can relate to younger kids. When I was a sophomore, this is what happened, and this is what I learned, and this is where I grew. So now I'm a senior, and I can share this with you because I was in your shoes. And I think that empathy, or being able to relate from an older player to a younger player, again, like you said, kids are always looking up to people. I say being a high school athlete, or being an athlete in general, it's what every young kid wants to be, and every old man wishes he could do again. And so that time is a lot. It's a lot. Like, there's some pressure and some hard experiences, but it's probably one of the best times you'll ever have as well.
So true. And for a lot of people like me, it's the peak of where I went,
Yep.
Keeping in mind our audience, we got a lot of young athletes, maybe striving for a little more playing time. Maybe they feel like they're on the outside looking in to their team, just trying, maybe in their mind, everything they can do to get coach's attention. From a coach himself, what is something you would say to a kid who's maybe at Brownsburg, sophomore, maybe a junior, just wanting to see the court more, wanting to help the team? What advice do you have to give them that you would want to see from them?
I just say, first, stay the course. I think what we learned before, and I'm going to date myself, you play on the outside courts, and we always said you had to win to stay. You had to wait your turn, and you had to win to stay. And with the evolution of youth sports, you show up and you play your game. And so you don't have to wait, and you don't have to win. And I think that's just something that's different with today's younger players. And so then when you get to school ball, not everybody gets to play. You're not paying to play per se. AAU, you get to change. If you want, you can change your teams. You can always move from your school, I suppose. But the school ball just changes the dynamics a little bit. So, stay the course. I think the other thing, at least with our guys, is know the criteria to play. And, like, we have, I used to say it was defend, rebound, run the floor, share the ball, and do what you do best. And I had an assistant that really just called it, like, renamed it our five pillars. And so we have, a basis that our program is built upon. And then knowing how and where you fit within that, for anything is know the criteria which your coach is really looking for. And I think a lot of it's, you see this all the time. It's if I can score, I can play. And it's generally it's like, if you can do all those other things, you can play. And then if you can score again, like, and I had said, like last night, I had a young man, he's going to be huge for us, but he's a creator, not a shooter. And he's firing it up in practice. And I'm like, man, that's not your job, dude. That is not why we get excited. And I'm sorry. Like, again, on Friday night, when the scoreboard matters, what you do is really, really important, and what you do well and you understanding that is critical. And I think that's just the maturation of kids. That's why, you know, again, young kids with talent get to play, but old guys that know their job stay on the floor a lot, I think.
That's awesome. I love that. And I think, you know, I think it kind of is a self-awareness of that, you know, of like if an opportunity presents itself, like knowing, hey, this is the role that I have to play, like not being like every kid can't be Curry. Right. And I think, you know, what I'd always tell my kids is try to be like a Swiss Army knife, because a different spot might open up and a different aspect of your game you might be able to contribute to. And ultimately, I think rooted in what you're saying is a sense of trust between you and the player. Like those five pillars is like trust that you will uphold those. Like, and I think that's the biggest thing for coaches. Everyone misses more than they make. And, you know, not everyone's going to always be perfect, but being able to, when you put someone out there, know that they're going to do what you want them to do. I think that's a huge part of, you know, being able to stay on the court. But I love those. Could you say those five pillars one more time?
Yeah. And a funny story with it. And again, it just reinforced because of the name, but we always thought, I think I was a high school coach at the time, but it was defend, run the floor, which is transition, rebound, being able to share the ball, which I always think is knowing when, where, and how, you know, again, your understanding of your offense, and then do what you do best, which again, like for a shooter or a scorer, obviously, but then somebody that can rebound, it's just important that knowing yourself and knowing what you're really good at. Anyway, we went to see somebody in Nebraska, and we had the opportunity to come back through University of Kansas, and they were getting ready to practice for the Final Four, and it was a great opportunity. And Larry Brown was there. It was right before he took the SMU job several years ago. And I'm like, here's my chance. Here's my chance to ask somebody like Larry Brown, like, I'm looking for the secret sauce, right? Like, what's the message? And he just reels them off. It just totally, it was like, well, I think if you can defend and your team's good in transition and you can control the glass and they know how to run offense, they can pass a catch and you have enough talent, you're going to be successful. And it was amazing. Like, and I think a lot of young coaches look for that, and young players, for that matter. It's like, what's the secret? What's the magic that's going to make this happen? And it really comes back to fundamental basketball, fundamental talents, being able to do that at a high level. And so it really let me know or reinforce that there's no secret answer to anything.
I love that. That's awesome. And we got a lot of camps in Kansas, so there's going to be a lot of people that's going to be pumped to hear that story. I think that's awesome. You know, I'm interested to hear your take on multi-sport athletes. You have a lot of coaches, you know, and sometimes as a basketball coach, you don't like when a kid's a multi-sport athlete. Sometimes selfishly you want some, I know some coaches do want them year round, but also there are a lot of advantages, you know, for multi-sport, whether it's injury prevention, just, you know, learning different leadership skills from coaches, different coaches. There's a plethora, but I'm curious, what is your take and you know, on kids being a multi-sport athlete, and if it's a positive take, what are the advantages to being a multi-sport athlete?
Oh, mine's definitely positive. We've won a lot of basketball games with multiple sport athletes. And I think the challenge is your situation. Is everybody on board with that? So it takes the football coach, the baseball coach, and the golf coach, and, you know, again, because you're sharing a student athlete when that happens. So your school culture really dictates that. And I've been in two situations at Mount Vernon in here where we've been very fortunate that's worked really well. And And we haven't really put kids in a difficult position of having to decide what they want to do. And again, at the end of the day, unless they end up being a professional talent, it's the development of the student athlete. You know, again, it's an experience for them to be with other adults and along those lines. I think probably the biggest concern is those kids taking care of their bodies, knowing that they're doing a lot. And so, you know, making sure, and I probably wasn't as aware of that as a younger coach, but knowing a guy that's in football, that he's lifting, he doesn't have to lift again, or he needs to take care of his body and those things. But I think our success, or, you know, our experience has been really good with multiple sport athletes. My assistant asked one time, you know, we have some kids that sometimes they have to miss, and it's like, well, would you rather play with or without them? And so the answer is always, you'd love to play with them. Therefore, you have to make the concession. And I know some coaches won't. They're like, well, if you're going to miss, that's unfair to the guys that are here. And so there's the other argument that, you know, what we do is really important. And if you can't be here with us, then I'm not willing, that's not fair to everybody else. And I think as long as you, again, communicating and establishing that within your program, you're able to do it. And then again, you have to make concessions if that's something you believe in.
Yeah, I agree. I think you said it perfectly. It's kind of like, would you rather, at the core, regardless of, you know, the positives, I think, you know, would you rather play with them or without them? And I think it's important that, you know, any young coaches, because we have a lot of coaches that listen to this too, any young coaches listening, is like, anything that's crucial for a player to be caught up to speed with the team should be ideally take place during the season, and outside of the season stuff should be stuff to improve the player as a whole. But yeah, no, I think that's a perfect take. And I think even like, one thing I always liked is kids being able to, and we talk about preparing them for life after school, giving them a chance to experience different types of leadership, and kind of say, hey, you know, I like how, you know, Coach Lynch does this. I like how Coach Smith does this. And then so when they kind of go out on their own, they can kind of have a blend of different, you know, coaching philosophies that they might identify with, which kind of leads me to my next point, my next question. How would you summarize your you know, coaching philosophy in a couple words? Who is Coach Lynch? If we were to be, you know, have a documentary to follow you around for a season, what would we see in terms of your coaching philosophy?
That's a great question. And I don't know that anything really pops into my head. I know we work really hard. I believe in work ethic. I believe in work capacity. You know, one of our things is we want to play harder, longer than our opponents. And so, you know, I always think when you go out in the world, work separates, like hard work separates people. You know, I've worked enough, or I can work more. And I'm definitely one that probably needs the work-life balance talk once in a while. But I do believe, like, you know, we work really hard, we work together. And our kids have that base foundation or basis when they leave. I think it's hard. Like, I've been told I'm hard to play for, because of the expectation. At the same time, man, our kids come every day and they don't appear that I'm hard to play for, if that makes sense. So, I believe in discipline. It's a lifelong thing. I always, you know, I heard it, so this is stolen, but like, hey, it's self-confidence and self-discipline, and we're here to help you with it until you can do it on your own. And so some of those just fundamental thoughts about where we're going in life with the kids, or where we want to see them go. Sometimes I'm the guy behind you helping you along, and sometimes I'm the roadblock to get you there. But I'm willing to play whatever role that is.
I love that. That's awesome. So, you know, as we kind of wrap things up, I want to take a reflective approach as you kind of look back on your coaching career. Are there any specific moments or achievements that stand out to you as, you know, particularly rewarding or memorable? And if so, can you kind of speak to why that is?
There are about three, I think. One was senior leadership. Our first the first two times we had real good success with Coach Alford, we had seniors who did not play. And they came every day and they worked really hard and they were completely invested. And so in my mind, it was, that was, okay, we've won and this is the common denominators. We had kids who weren't getting to play that sacrificed greatly, who were highly invested and were always the example of, this guy comes every day, he's not getting to play and he cares more than you do, was a great, like it was a, it, it just flowed through our team that way. And then the second was we were upset or defeated the year before in those circumstances where we faced great disappointment, came back, had through our leadership of Coach Alford, but like hard summers, preparation, the chip on our shoulder of disappointment to come back and play for a Division III national championship or go to the Sweet 16 in 99. I just always felt good, like, and even in my own life, that every time there's a disappointment, there's something else coming with hard work. And so those were the two big things. And I think anymore, it's like, that whether it's good or bad, get out of bed the next day. I think anymore, our message to our guys is like, show up the next day and do the work, has been kind of our motto over the last 8 or 10 years.
Love that. What can we expect from Bulldog basketball this season?
Competitive kids. We were down to a really good North Central team last Tuesday and down 24-12 in the first half and then come back to win 52-48. And I just, what I appreciated was the grit, the resiliency we put on the board. We wanted to put a younger North Central team in adversity, and they came out and punched us and they put us in adversity. And I was just really, really proud of the resilience we had when it came time to win the ball game, our execution. So just the grittiness that this group seems to have early in the season. But we're going to grow. We've got a lot of new faces and that melding of new players and returning talent is always an interesting journey. I did hear a good one the other day. The journey is never a straight line. So again, we steal a lot of stuff from other coaches, but it'll be interesting to see how it goes, how it, the highs and lows kind of make us who we are. Right. So two games in, I love our kids. They work hard and I think we got a lot of fight in us.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to definitely, I want you to, you know, when we wrap this up, definitely send a Zoom link or a live stream link if you got one for your team. We'd love to catch a couple games here at the office. Even a recommendation of a good rivalry game too. That would be helpful. But how we wrap things up on this podcast, we have a segment called Full Court Press, where there's just some quick hitting questions, a little lighthearted. We'll rattle them off. We'll see how it goes. Does that work for you?
Sounds good, man.
All right, cool. So I'll start off with an easy one for you. Favorite color?
Purple.
Good choice. Go Bulldogs. Favorite cereal?
Oh, good one. I don't eat cereal. How about Cocoa Puffs?
Okay, good. Now, this might be a tough harder question if you're not eating cereal, but and now I put this question into Weed Out Psychopaths. So let's hope it goes right. Is it milk before cereal or is it cereal before milk?
Cereal in the bowl with milk on top.
Thank you. Good. The podcast would have ended there if it was the other way. It would have. Favorite movie of all time?
Point Break. The original.
Okay. Would you rather give up appetizers or desserts for the rest of your life?
It has to be appetizers. No good meal is complete without a dessert.
I love it. And there's a whole industry of desserts. I mean, we don't have the appetizer industry. I mean, and plus, best appetizer is buffalo wings, and I order that as an entree. So, I mean, great choice. Best Gatorade color?
Blue. Any color of blue.
Good choice. Now, these ones, little more serious. Best player you've ever played against, and I'll give you a chance to also, or say, played with. And if it's not a player that comes to mind, I can give you some leeway with best coach you've played for.
Gosh, I've coached some really good good players. So any Indiana All-Star from Mount Vernon or Brownsburg. And then I'd have to say the experience of playing the 99 Duke team in the Sweet 16 with the number of professional athletes and just with Coach K and their team and watching them on film and then seeing them in person and the way they went about it. And it was an impressive weekend for us for sure.
That's awesome. Now this answer might be one and the same to this next question, but loudest crowd you've ever played in front of.
Okay. That would have
to be coached in front of
the old Reynolds Coliseum at North Carolina State in the NIT. So maybe a couple years before that, we didn't get in the tournament and had to play at North Carolina State. And the introductions, again, those venues where you just can't even hear the person talking next to you. It was a really, really neat environment for our guys to play in.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, Coach, thank you for coming on. Really, it was a pleasure getting to talk with you, pick your brain. I know our audience is going to be excited for this podcast. So thanks for coming on. And we look forward to keeping in touch and following the Bulldog basketball team this year.
All right. We really appreciate having me on, Reed. It was a great opportunity to represent Brownsburg and our program. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.